Let's face it. There are just some songs that are way better as the cover. In other words, the version done by somebody else other than the original artist or the original person to put them out. I don't think there's going to be much argument when you say that the Hendrix version of All Along the Watchtower is better than the Dylan's version. And I know that's not really fair because, I mean, everybody does Dylan better than Dylan. But anyways, on this week's Ludini Rock and Roll Circus, we're going to tell you all about 10 covers that are possibly better than the originals. Get ready to rock out with your talk out. It's the Ludini Rock and Roll Circus. All right, everybody, welcome back to the Ludini Rock and Roll Circus. My name is Lou Lombardi, a.k.a. Ludini. I am your ringmaster. Today, it is a two-person circus.
I love two-person circuses.
But we used to do this all the time. So, you know, Lily and I are like, you know, I did extra studying today for this because I had a feeling we were going to be short a couple of guys. And we'll tell you all about what's going on with Pittsburgh Kevin and the Hawk here in a little bit. Anyways, it is the Ludini Rock and Roll Circus. Our website is LudiniRockandRollCircus.com and LouLombardiMusic.com. LouLombardiMusic.com is a really cool link because you get some great free music that you're probably not aware of that's really great rock and roll. And you get to become a member of my private group on Facebook, the Lou Lombardi's Inner Circle, where we do nothing but talk about music. It's really refreshing. It's a kind of a safe space on the internet for people that just want to, you know, talk about music and not be bothered with all the other garbage out there. So check it out. Go to LouLombardiMusic.com. Shout out to wolfscustoms.online, Chris Thunderwolf Dodson. They do awesome work on musical instruments, custom painting, hollow flash, all kind of cool stuff. Check them out at wolfscustoms.online, rockrageradio.com. Download the app because it ain't crap.
It's free.
It's free.
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 It's free ballin'.
Anyways, guys, so go to rockrageradio.com, download the app. You can listen to great guitar-driven rock 24/7. A lot of great shows on there as well. A lot of great jocks, including my good friend here, my sister from another mister, Lily V6. It has her own show. What is that again?
My show is Hot Licks with Lily 6. It is on Thursdays at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, rockrageradio.com.
Okay, very simple there. There is an app, like we said, you can download. I love cover. Whoops, no, it's not screech. Back this down. I love cover songs.
Same.
I think they're so neat, like to hear, and I especially love it when the band does some little different take on
like
the song.
They make it their own.
They kind of make it their own.
Yeah.
I was listening today, for instance. I was there's a Secondhand Songs or something like that. It's a website that tells you all the versions.
Yes, I know that website. I'm very familiar.
And there's like 30 versions of Stairway to Heaven.
Yes.
Now we're not going to talk about Stairway to Heaven, I don't think. Are you going to talk about Stairway to Heaven? Okay. But Mastodon, which is a great band, does a version of Stairway to Heaven. Now, look, that the dude's got an amazing voice. They sound great, but it's essentially the Led Zeppelin song. Like I said, there's really
no changes.
On the solo, there's a couple of different notes, but even that, like everything is pretty much exactly the same. And I'm like, you guys sound great, but like if maybe if you're playing in a bar, that would be like really impressive. Like,
Mastodon-y.
Yeah, like if they got up and did that at a bar,
everybody would love it.
Would, oh my God, that's amazing.
Right.
But to put it out, I don't know. And in any case, I kind of like it when somebody takes a song and says, and that reminds me of, you probably don't have this on your list, so I'm just going to kind of like throw this out there as part of the introduction here. Do you remember in the 90s, there was this whole tribute album craze There was a tribute to Led Zeppelin. There was a tribute to Hendrix. There was a trip to everybody. There was a giant, it was a huge craze. And it was some really good records and some really neat songs that came out. There was a cover album called Hempilation.
And
it was all about the song. It was all about the great folk and rock songs that were about marijuana.
And, I didn't know that was a thing.
That's why it's called Hempilation. And there's some great, but there's a great cover on there of the Muddy Waters song. Champagne and cocaine and reefer. Champagne and reefer. Sorry, I had a little brain fart there. So you got to hear all these bands, but it's a reinterpretation. It isn't the Muddy Waters version. It's, you know, a reinterpretation.
It's their own.
Yes.
They made it their own.
Exactly. Exactly. So stuff like that. The Black Crowes do Rainy Day Woman, and they do it. They do it really good. They don't do it with the marching band thing like Dylan does it. it's not like the Dylan thing. You know, they play. It's the Black Crowes. they're a 5-piece rock band, and they just play the song like a rock band
with all instruments.
Yeah, and it sounds really cool. It's not on my list, but their version of that would definitely should be on this list as better, because like everybody does Dylan better than Dylan.
Which is kind of sad.
It just does. But I have some really fun ones on here. And Lily and I come from different sort of approaches. So I don't know if we have many crossovers. We might. Sometimes we hit each.
Maybe
sometimes we have a couple crossovers. But then a lot of times it's like, you go like, oh, I didn't know about that. And I say to you, oh, I didn't know about that. So that's what makes the show really fun. Real quick, you guys out there in the audience, please, if you don't mind, send the Hawk, Keith Hawkins is his name, if you're friends with him on social media. If you're not, just send him a message and check on him, make sure he's doing okay. Him and his wife live in New Orleans, and just this hurricane has them all jacked up. The power transformer for the entire city fell in the Mississippi frickin' river. So they have no electricity, so therefore, you know, that means there's no internet. He must be losing his mind.
I mean, he's probably having a couple drinks. He'll be okay.
Oh, man, I don't know what he's doing. Oh, my God. It sucks. I've had electricity out a couple times here, and it's just like, oh, it sucks. But in any case, so they're talking like a month.
Yeah, I heard. Like, minimum.
Yeah, I mean, the entire transformer for the whole city. So if you guys, Keith Hawkins, you know, send him a little, you know, hey, bro, hope you're doing well, thinking about you. That would probably go a long way, you know, and to show some support. Our other brother from another mother, Pittsburgh, Kevin, is attending a funeral for a friend. Not the Elton John song. a real funeral for a real friend. I was just so funny. I went over there on Saturday, because I had... At that point, I think I was drinking cleaning products.
Not inaccurate.
So I went over there because I know he'd have a Guinness or something. So I went over there, and he had just gotten home from work, and he was drinking a Guinness, and we were talking. And, you know, like, this is not a thing with guys. But he's like, yeah, my best friend. I mean, Lou, you're my best friend, but I'm like, Kevin.
You guys got weird about
we're it. We're not chicks, okay? Like, it's fine. Like, you know. You know, it's like, you know, Chanks, man, I thought I was your best friend. You know, some right, Lily,
that's,
right?
No,
some
that's
girl
super true.
Posts to my BFF on Facebook.
And there's another girl that's getting
yeah,
angry.
Yeah, it's like, true. Yeah, it's a total thing.
It's true.
It's a total thing. Yes, we're sexist here. So, but anyways, so he's dealing with a funeral.
That sucks.
And I don't know if he's going to be in. He may just pop in at the end or somewhere in the middle or whatever. And that'd be great. He is absolutely welcome to do so. But he is not texted. So I don't think that's going to happen. Anyways, guys, we are talking about these cover songs. And I think this is really going to be fun. As always, we're going to get started with Lily.
With me.
Yes. What you got, girl?
So I'm going to say, and you're going to think it's a completely different one, but Nothing Compares to You. I'm going to be talking about the Chris Cornell version of this
song.
Yeah,
that's what I figured.
Okay, I thought you were going to say she.
And it is better than Shine Heads. Yes. I agree.
Written and composed by Prince originally.
Prince!
For his side project, The Family. The song featured their 1985, was featured on their 1985 debut. The song's lyrics explore feelings of longing from the point of view of an abandoned lover. The song appeared more or less as a filler song on their album and was not released as a single. And received very little recognition. Prince took no interest in performing it in concerts. However, in the years after, Sinead O'Connor turned it into a hit in the 90s with that disaster SNL thing that we all know about, he began performing it live. Fast forward. Cornell's, I think, is the best cover of this song ever, and maybe one of the best covers of all time. His voice is beautiful. He takes the song, and with his signature crooning voice, makes it something incredibly unique. It has an interesting history itself, like I just talked about with Sinead. As for a lot of folks, that's still the version that they know, unfortunately. Don't listen to that one anymore.
You are no longer allowed to listen to that. If you're a fan of Ludini Rock and Roll Circus, you cannot listen to Shinehead's version.
And you're not going to want to anyway after you hear Chris's. If you haven't, Chris Cornell's rendition is absolutely stunning and will make you miss his contributions to music with each listen. This is the version that I do play on Hot Licks with Lily Six every once in a while on the Thursdays. It's breathtaking. And the song, I took some information from that website you were talking about, that secondhand songs. It's been covered 102 times. Sinead O'Connor, Me First in the Gimme Gimmes, Aretha Franklin. The list goes on. So
Urethra.
Urethra, yes. Aretha. She, I heard her version too. Still like Chris Cornell's the best. It's sort of long and drawn out, but that's okay. I still love it because his voice is amazing.
He has this...
he croons.
Yeah, well, he croons. But it's he has this, like, he brings this vulnerability to it that, like, I don't think that, like, Sinead O'Connor or Aretha Franklin could do. Like, they were just, he sounds tortured or something in the song.
He really was, though, when he was singing it, to be honest. That's real feelings, not Sinead's crybabiness in her video.
Crybabiness?
Yeah, with her fake tears.
Is that a word?
I made it up.
Crybabiness.
It is now. Like Paul Stanley's.
We're
going
to get t-shirts to say crybabiness.
We will. Paul Stanley also got the sniffles.
Joe Freeman asked me, can you mind if we talk about business for half a second? Joe Freeman asked me, we want to put the Lily Six shirts in the Ludini store. Are we allowed to do that?
Yeah,
okay, so we're going to need to hit you up and find out the info. And
yeah, that's fine. Okay. We can do that for sure.
So I just want to see Joe, I know you're listening. So Lily said it's cool, so we can do it. He asked me to ask you that.
That's fine. He can message me too. That's fine.
So let me. This song is like, you know, I think we've done a show on like the overplayed. Maybe did we do a show?
We did.
Okay, yeah. And I don't know why we didn't talk about this, because this song, I mean, this is an awesome song, but it really is.
Yeah, why haven't
overplayed? Overplayed, and that is "Take Me to the River" by the Talking Heads.
It is,
and Al Green wrote this song with guitarist Mabon Hodges in Lake Hamilton, Arkansas, during a during a 3-day stay at a rented house. Just 2 years after the release of the song, Al Green fully embraced his Baptist roots, became an ordained minister at the Full Gospel Tabernacle in Memphis, Tennessee. Growing up in a strict religious household, Green was encouraged to sing as long as it was gospel music. But that didn't keep Al from sneaking in forbidden records from worldly R&B singers like Jackie Wilson, Sam Cooke, etc. The combination of these influences is what defined Green's career and came to a head in the song, where the singer struggles between his desire for physical and spiritual love. The verses tell us he's smitten with a girl who's more interested in stealing his money and his cigarettes than stealing his heart. He begs, hold me, love me, please me, tease me, till I can't take no more. But the chorus, he's back to the church altar. Take me to the river and wash me down. Won't you cleanse my soul, put my feet on the ground. Baptism is always a hotly debated topic among Christian denominations. Is it necessary for salvation? Is adult baptism superior to infant baptism? The little sprinkle you get in the Catholic Church, right? It's full a sprinkle a day.
Wow. And there it is.
Is full immersion necessary? List goes on, blah, blah, blah. As for Green, he's singing about full immersion style practiced by John the Baptist in the early days of Christianity, where the subject was completely submerged in water and their sins were washed away. Green explained that the baptism isn't about cleansing from sin, but about fulfilling a need that transcends romantic love. Well, how is a person going to cleanse your soul and put your feet on the ground? That's like I'm talking to somebody that's going to be higher than somebody who just simply says, I love you, and I'll see you after dinner. The sentiment is echoed in the 77 The Bell album, beginning of transition to gospel career. It's you that I want, but it's him that I need, he sings in the title song. The new wave band, the Talking Heads, covered the song on their 78 album. Went to 26 on the Hot 100. Tina Weymouth said that they had played it in the studio. It sounded so great when we played it back, we immediately imposed a rule on ourselves. No additional playing except single notes, just one ping or bop or pang. The Talking Heads version endured on classic rock radios. Many listeners had no idea it was a cover song. The Talking Heads version was a breakthrough for the band, whose only chart entry to that point, you're playing footsie with me, was Psycho Killer.
Which is one of my favorite songs.
Okay, when their rendition of Take Me to the River became a modest hit, it earned them an invitation to perform the song on American Bandstand, giving them their first significant television exposure.
That's crazy.
It was also covered by Foghat, and Brian Ferry, and Levon Helm. Might then maybe go check out their versions of it. But
oh my gosh!
And the song was one of the number one tunes sung by, you guys remember Big Mouth Billy Bass.
My dad has one of those things.
It's an animatronic singing toy representing a largemouth bass that was popular in the early 2000s. Al Green said he received more royalties from the fishy figurine sketchy cover than any other recording of the song.
That's great.
Wow.
A toy. It was a mounted dead fish that sang when you put the button.
Yeah, I totally remember it.
My dad has one.
I remember going into stores and pushing the button and making sure and the people that worked, they're all rolling their eyes.
You were one of those people.
Yeah, oh boy, here comes another one of them a-holes.
I was it at the Eckerd at the Washington Mall? Because that's where I worked and sold it.
It's a great tune, and when they play it, they really rock it out in the concert film Stop Making Sense. And if you haven't seen that in a long time, you should definitely check it out. And mentioned Chris Cornell in the last song, and Lily, I have to say this before I forget, because I'll forget. We need to do a podcast on telling the story, like the mysterious deaths.
Oh, yeah, that would be a good one. That'd be fun.
10 rockers' mysterious deaths or something.
Sam Cooke.
Yeah, Sam Cooke is definitely on the list. Chris Cornell, Kurt Cobain, et cetera. Anyways, I digress for half a second. Thank you for your patience.
I love how you just do disclaimers after the fact.
After the fact. First, I tell everybody to talk amongst themselves because we're going to talk about business. Now I'm telling you, we're still talking about business.
Podcast ideas.
And I want to I want to say one more little bit here in regards to the group today. Billy Thomas, because you talked about Chris Cornell's version of
Nothing compares
to you. And Billy Thomas told me about Warren Haynes' version of One by U2. And it's kind of done in the same way. It's done as just him and a guitar.
Yeah.
I wouldn't say that it's better than the original, but it is a very cool, again, very kind of emotional kind of interpretations. It has like a different, isn't it funny? Sometimes when a different artist does a song, it kind of has a different meaning even.
Yeah.
You know, and that's really what caught my attention about Warren Haynes' version of One and Chris Cornell's version of Nothing Compares to You. It's like they almost become like different songs altogether. Anyways.
No, I know exactly what you mean though.
So that was a sort of honorable mention or just a side note. What do you got next, Lily?
Higher Ground, originally by Stevie Wonder, but redone by the Red Hot Chili Peppers. A funk song written by Stevie Wonder, which first appeared on his 73 album Inner Visions. The song reached number 4 on the Billboard Hot 100 and number 1 on the U.S. Hot R&B Singles Chart.
Hot!
Wonder wrote and recorded the song in a three-hour burst of creativity in May of 1973. The album version of the song contains an extra verse and runs 30 seconds longer than the single verse. The song lyrics addresses the issue of reincarnation. Wonder commented when he interviewed by the New York Times that basically he would like to believe in reincarnation, so that's why he wrote the song. Red Hot Chili Peppers was bold enough to take on a Stevie Wonder hit, make it their own, and I think, in my opinion, make it better. It's a little heavier, a little rocky. Not only that, it got them a Grammy nomination in 1991, released as a cover as the first single from their fourth studio album, Mother's Milk. This was one of their hits that helped them achieve mainstream success. Kiedis joked that the reason they covered this song is because it was a debate between this and New Kids on the Block's Hangin' Tough. So they chose Higher Ground.
I would love to hear the Red Hot Chili Peppers do
Hangin' Tough.
Yeah, I think they would probably kick the shit out of that.
This version has been featured in films, TV shows, and video games, including Mighty Morphin Power Rangers, Beavis and Butthead, Center Stage, The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, Walking Tall, The Longest Yard, The Karate Kid, and so on and so on. It has been covered 77 times. Ike and Tina Turner did it once, The Osmonds, Michael McDonald, Eric Clapton, and a couple more, several more.
I need to say, because Willie Franklin, my buddy, man, we haven't played together in a long time, brother. Great bass player. He chimed in on the group today, and it made me think of when we were all in Slick Sammy and we were learning the Red Hot Chili Peppers. Mm-hmm. Now, this was pre-internet, and we listened and listened to those words and could not understand anything. Vulture's trying to be an iron again.
Oh, yeah.
And so Willie took it upon himself to go find the Sammy Hagar version, the Stevie Wonder version. There might be a Sammy Hagar version.
There might
Stevie Wonder version, and he was like, I you can't understand the words on that either. So we had no idea. So Greg sang, So that's how we did it.
Your solution is wait till it's later on in the night when everybody's drunk and doesn't matter anyway.
Yeah. And nobody in the audience, so they're all just saying,
That's pretty much how it is.
Yeah, that was it. That's how it works. Okay, I am going to, you know, this is one of those songs that really, you hear it and you go, like, of course this is a Bruce Springsteen song. It has to be. This is, you don't even question it. Yeah, it's a great Bruce Springsteen song. You'd be wrongo mongo. Jersey Girl was written by Tom Waits.
Yep.
Wrote the song about his new wife, Kathleen Brennan. He was getting over a turbulent relationship with Ricky Lee Jones when she came into his life and quote unquote saved him.
Aw.
Yes.
That's nice.
Springsteen covered the song in concert on many occasions. He started performing it at a series of shows in 81 at the New Meadowlands Arena in New Jersey. Even though he did not write this, Springsteen feels the character is the same guy from his earlier song, Sandy Rosalita, who has now grown up and got himself a Jersey girl.
I mean, it seems like it would be a Springsteen song for sure, with the name alone.
Yeah, I mean, just under the name Jersey. And I think a lot of people do not know that this is a Tom Waits song.
You would be correct, and I'm going to tell you why. There's a newer song called Jersey Girl that mentions the Bruce Springsteen song, Jersey Girl.
Yep. And even those people did not realize that it is not a Bruce Springsteen song. Springsteen released this as a B-side of Cover Me. 2 years later, he used the same version taken from a show at the Meadowlands on his box set, 75 to 85. This is one of the few cover songs. What happened there? Did something jump out of my face? Few cover songs Springsteen released. Usually it was other artists performing his songs. So this is where somebody might, and I'm a giant Tom Waits fan, like huge. I have Heart Attack and Vine. And it sort of slipped my mind, and I had to think, like, is Tom singing a Springsteen song? Like, that's really out of character for Tom Waits, who doesn't really do covers either. So I'm like, but Springsteen wouldn't sing a cover. And it turns out, yes. I need to just quickly mention before I wrap this little segment up that I don't know if this is a better cover or not, But the Pointer Sisters version, you're riding in my car.
Okay. Dun, dun, dun,
dun. Turn on the radio. That is a Springsteen song. A lot of people do not realize that that is a Springsteen song. And I don't know. That was the bigger hit.
Now I have to go back and listen to it.
That was the bigger hit, not his. He does it too. He did. He did. He put. He released a lot. He may have done it when he killed the MTV Unplugged series when he came on Electric. I think that they played that on that. I'm not sure. But it is live. And then once it came out, the DVE, that's the local rock station, started playing it and stuff like that. So all of a sudden, this song that was this kind of silly song. In fact, the rock stations in Pittsburgh used to parody this song and have like Elmer Fudd voices singing in it and all kind of stuff like that. And then when Springsteen finally put out his version, it was like, okay, it's the boss. You can't mess with the boss. So just like a little double header there. With a couple of the Springsteen-related stories and songs.
Word.
Word.
And that's it.
Word to your mother. All right, guys, thank you so much. This has been a Ludini. No good. What do you got?
You're No Good, originally done by D.D. Warwick.
That's not very nice. That's not nice.
I don't mean you.
Oh.
This is for all the other ones. Originally done by D.D. Warwick, the one I am saying is better is Linda Ronstadt. Written by Clint Ballard Jr., first performed by D.D. Warwick for Jubilee Records in 1963 with promotion by Jerry Lieber and Mike Stoller. It has been covered by many artists, including charting versions by Betty Everett in 1963, The Swinging Blue Jeans in 64, and Linda Ronstadt in 1975. Her version was a number one hit and the most successful version in the United States. And the one we're talking about, was one of the most prolific artists in the 70s. Linda gave this, Someone Done Me Wrong song, a sinister edge as she weaved through her many moods supported by Motown-like backup vocals. Linda began performing You're No Good to close her live shows early in 73 after her band member Kenny Edwards suggested it to her. She first included it in her set list while opening for Neil Young. And she gave an early televised performance of the song on an episode of The Midnight Special, which was broadcast in December of 73. So I wasn't even born yet, but that's okay.
I can't believe you're talking about You're No Good. You're not mentioning the Van Halen version?
No. Anyway, others have attempted.
What?
No. Others have attempted this, but no one comes close to Linda's version. D.D. Warwick's version was not a hit. However, the song got around. The success of You're No Good set a precedent for Ronstadt's single releases, which over the next 5 years would virtually all be remakes of classic rock and roll songs. It has been covered 72 times.
Including by Van Halen and Van Halen too.
And Tina Turner, Michael Bolton. Van Halen is on my list here. Elvis Costello, Reba McEntire, and Wilson Phillips. Plus more. I like this.
Linda Ronstadt is one of these people like Joan Jett who made a career out of other people's songs.
And she did a great job.
Blue Bayou. Oh, my God. Look, there's chills. I have goosebumps. Her version of that is insane. Her version of Desperado, insane. Just absolutely amazing.
I love her.
Singer. Just one of those voices, and she was very easy on the eyes, especially to 13, 14-year-old boys.
Specifically Lou Lombardi, apparently.
That record with her and the roller skates on, oh, man. and the hot shorts, oh, God.
It's okay. Have a drink.
I was going to lose my mind. I'm an old man, and I'm, like, still lusting after Linda Ronstadt. This will be a quick honorable mention, playing off the Linda Ronstadt thing.
Right.
I'm not going to go into too much detail. After the Gold Rush, the Neil Young song.
Okay.
There is an awesome version of it by Trio. And Trio is Dolly Parton, Emmylou Harris, Linda Ronstadt.
I love all them.
And their they really bring out, I mean, the way they do it, it's almost like a hymn. I mean, when you hear it, you're like, shit, this is a kind of religious song. Like, it's like, wow.
I mean, well, those are three fantastic boys.
Yeah,
right
and the
there,
way, but so. The way they, yeah, and they're, yeah. If you've never heard, they did two albums. And, you know, the singing is amazing. But there are a handful of magic moments. And that is definitely their version of After the Gold Rush is, you should check it out. Is it better than your, well, you know, it has a different. There's something I want
this
to talk
is an apples
about.
And oranges.
Let's talk about this a little bit. Okay. Because you were talking about the Red Hot Chili Peppers thing, and I think some people, if it rocks, our audience is more of a rock audience. So if it kind of rocks harder, they kind of
like
say that that's the better version.
Yeah.
There are times, though, where I don't think it needs to, it doesn't need to rock harder. And I'll give you an example. And Bill Damiano, I'm going to pick on you for a minute.
Oh, and he's watching too.
But you mentioned, Bill the Scene, Bill Damiano, check out Bill's website and podcast. He's a great dude, great podcaster. But you mentioned the cover of Cats in the Cradle. Was that Ugly Kid Joe or?
Yes.
Okay. And I think that is an abomination. I think it loses like what the song is really about. It's not supposed to be some big guitar rock song. It's like it's meant to tell this like kind of really, it's really touching, poignant kind of story. And I just don't think it works as like a big rock tune.
And I agree with that too. I'm just saying that in my case for Higher Ground, they kept the funk, but made it a little harder.
That's where I think, and I'm the same way. So I had to question myself because I'm like, I'm the same way. Like I love the Chili Peppers version better than, because I just think it's just edgier.
Yeah.
And I kind of like that.
And they
aspect
still kept
of,
the funk version.
Yeah, no. And it's a Stevie Wonder. So, I mean, yeah, so it's going to be Stevie Wonder. Come on, dude. Like, you know, he's amazing. So it's a great song. And they brought this like edginess to it, which I think is really great. So I'm not, but I don't necessarily think that always makes the song better.
Correct.
It's just what I'm trying to say.
I got
so,
you.
So,
that's you.
Is it my turn?
Yeah, because you were just doing an honorable mention.
Okay, horrible mention. What time is it here? Oh, we got a lot of time.
Do you want me to talk about the audience?
No. I'll do it. I'm going to get into this. This is a song that I freaking love. This might be one of my if I had to make a top 100 playlist, maybe even a top 40 playlist, this song would definitely be on it. It was written by Randy Newman, the nephew of Academy Award-winning composer Lionel Newman. The song is about a party that left a bad taste in the writer's mouth. The drug scene was fairly new to American middle-class youth at that time. Newman explained in a 2017 interview with Rolling Stone, it's a guy going to a party and he's a little scared. The first line, will you have whiskey with your water or sugar with your tea, was a vague connection to acid. I don't remember being thrown off by that stuff then if I was that unsophisticated, which is possible, but I wouldn't admit it. Of course, I'm speaking of Mama Told Me Not to Come. I'm sorry. I thought that I made that clear when I said Randy Newman. Eric Bird and the Animals did a version of it in 1967. Randy Newman hadn't even released it at that point, but he started recording his own material on his 68 debut album. Many songs had already been recorded by others. Mama Told Me Not to Come was included on the second album, and it came out, and Three Dog Night did it. Newman had little chart success as an artist in these early years, but Three Dog Night did, and their raucous rendition was the one listeners preferred. Newman is at first dismissed them as a teeny bopper band, but later rescinded that statement, saying he liked their version a great deal. He enjoyed the royalty checks as well. Confirmed by Three Dog Night's lead singer, Corey Wells, who said, after it became a hit and number one, Newman called him and said, I just want to thank you for putting my kids through college.
That's great.
But I have I think there's a couple songs on both of our lists, maybe not. I know there's a couple or three on mine that are written by these sort of like songwritery guys who don't typically have the hits themselves. They put them out. Like we mentioned Tom Waits earlier, and Randy Newman is the same. Yes, Randy Newman has had some songs on the radio, but he's the guy that writes the songs, and usually somebody else
sings
is
them.
Able to do something and really make them. Really make them hot. So Mama Told Me Not to Come by Randy Newman.
Newman.
He a new man. Hey, speaking of new man, Chris Thunderwolf Dodson.
Who is watching, by the way.
Who's watching. Chris, we love you. Please go to wolfscustoms.online. Get a custom finish on your musical instrument. Shout out to rockrageradio.com. Download the app. And LudiniRockAndRollCircus.com and LouLombardiMusic.com. At LouLombardiMusic.com, you get access to some great music as well as our private group, which when you hear us talking about people during the podcast, those are the folks that are in our group and they're hanging out with us live. And I think Lily wants to do some shout outs.
Yes. We have Chuck Morrell, Todd Kane, Keith Hawkins, looked like he was watching for a minute. Maybe he still is. Chris Thunderwolf and Raven. Brady Novotny, Bill Damiano, Vince Ornato. Is that his name?
Yep.
Okay. And that is it.
Vince did a, like, Vince is so knowledgeable. He's a, first of all, he's a great artist, but he's so knowledgeable about music. He posted these two long posts in the group today about Ray Charles. Nice. And how Ray was that, well, he took these old songs and kind of updated them and had big hits with some, sort of introduced like a new generation to like old folk music. So check it out. It's one, another reason you learn a lot in the group. A lot of people will post versions of songs you haven't heard, or even bands you don't know about. Maybe stuff you forgot about, like, oh crap, that was a great song.
I do that all the time.
So, so it's a cool place to hang out for stuff like that. Thank you, Vince. So let's move right along. What do you got next, Lily?
Next, and I can't stress this song enough. I like to talk about it as much as possible. It's not Iron Maiden, surprisingly, but and there's that. The Look, originally done by Roxette, currently done by Animal Drive, and which is fantastic, but we'll get into that.
So, I will tell you, I 1,000% agree it is a better version.
I do love it. And I do love Roxette. But song by Swedish pop duo Roxette. It was released in early 1989 as a fourth single from their second studio album, Look Sharp. It became an international hit and was one of the most successful singles of 1989. Topped the charts in 25 countries and was the first of their four number ones on the Billboard Hot 100. When The Look was about to be released in Sweden as the fourth single, an American exchange student from Minnesota named Dean Cushman returned from Sweden and urged his local top 40 radio station to play the song. So that is how they got their American market. Kind of cool. Blah, 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 blah. Anyway, and while I do love this version and the song in general, never thinking it could be topped because it's Roxette and they can do no wrong, out comes the band Animal Drive. Creating a very hard rock and better version of the song, including some metal wails and killer guitar work. It was released on the 2019 album Back to the Roots, along with some other covers that the band has done, but this is by far their best cover that I think they do. Totally blew me away from the very beginning, and I can't think of his name right now because it's a very foreign-sounding name.
Dolph,
I'm sorry.
Dolph Lundgren.
That is not it.
Alexander Goodenough.
I can't remember his name, but his wail at the very beginning hooked me like nothing.
How about no, I know it. It was Gerard Depardieu.
It was not Gerard Depardieu. That man is a large man, and this guy is not. Jelly is second. No, that's wrong.
Speaking of large.
Anyway, it's been covered 25 times in total. Barbie, No, Not That One, Bop and Beach, Freshman 15, A La Carte, and a bunch of overseas type bands have covered this song. So.
Sweet.
But Animal Drive is my
that
favorite version.
That is very
version.
Good. That's, I'm not sure. I don't know too much about that band, but just go to Animal Drive on Spotify, and it's all there. They have this great, great covers. There is that's going to take me back, man. I'm going to have to find one for you guys. Kevin and I played this band on, I cannot remember, their Canadian band, with a female singer, and they have an album out where they just do the Canadian rock band songs that influenced them, and they play Rush. Of course, they play April Wine. They play Triumph. It's so good, and I will find it for you. I can't remember which Rush song they do, but it's really very, 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 very cool stuff. So we'll look that up later and try to get it to you. I've been dying the whole night to talk about this.
Talk about it. And I love this song. It was not on my list, but I love it.
Ironically, thing, not something to talk about, but Thing Called Love by Bonnie Raitt. A lot of people know this song because, but not because they ever heard the original version by, again, this is like a Gary Numan, like Tom Waits, John Hyatt. Mm-hmm. The only song that most people would know that John Hyatt does is Perfectly Good Guitar. That did get some rock radio play. And Have a Little Faith in Me,
which
is in
love.
Hope Floats or something like that.
It's in a lot of songs, actually.
It's in
movies.
In a lot of movies. And there's a bunch of different versions. So people know those two songs by him. But he's one of these guys that writes songs that other people do, and they end up having big hits with them. And this is an example of that. Like most of Hyatt's tunes, this one was a hit for someone else. In this case, a major factor in the revival of Bonnie Raitt's career. Hyatt's version is much more raw bone than Raitt's and has an emotional resonance that only comes across in the larger context of the album Bring the Family. This is a really good record that he did with Ry Cooder and who else? Jim Keltner. It's like a classic lineup, and they just got lightning in a bottle on this record. If you want to dig a little deep and you like this sort of Americana rock kind of sound, if you're cool with that, it's a record you should really check out. I'm gonna talk and I wish Hawk was on because he could probably explain this better than me. Bonnie Raitt's version, the whole song swings. It's all with a swing feel. John's version, the verses are straight, the choruses swing. It is really crazy. That's really unusual. There's very few songs that do stuff like that, where they have that kind of feel change. And it's one of those things that you kind of have to hear to kind of like appreciate or understand. But Nick of Time was the album that disappeared on for Bonnie Raitt. And Bonnie, like, this is her 10th album. And she was just really struggling. Like it was like couldn't pay the bills. Like, right. Going out, she had to fire her band because the record label dropped her. And she had to... She went out like kind of not busking, but just went out and did like acoustic shows just so she could pay the freaking bills.
So she can live.
Yeah, so she could live. And and it's through like a strange twist. Don, the producer Don Was, who's produced, he's tons and tons of records. Caught one of these acoustic performances and said, I want to work with you. And so they put together some songs. They went and found songs that she could do acoustically so they couldn't do a real expensive demo. They could just do her and kind of get the record labels kind of interested. Eventually they got a record label interested. You know, she was signed to Prince's label for a little while.
I didn't know that. No.
And she broke her leg skiing. And so, like, so by the time she got all of the, like, that they couldn't, you know, the schedules, it didn't work out. So she ended up leaving that record label. but Don Was got with her and brought in these songs from other songwriters who were absolutely just perfect for her. Just is like, this is a thing about it. This is what it makes a great producer. They know it sounds good. And like, he knew that if I get her with the right group of musicians, with the right songs, like, we can really make something special. And this is one of those records. When we talked about albums, you could listen to the whole way through.
Yeah.
This is definitely one of those records. Like, it, you know,
I can't say that I have, but I could, it I
is
would try
a, it. Absolutely. A stunning album. It is a who's who of session musicians, including people like, Herbie Hancock, you know, playing some piano on it. The Heart Attack Horns, Kim Wilson from the Fabulous Thunderbirds does some harmonica work. Sir Harry Bowens and Sweet Pea Atkinson, David Crosby, and Graham Nash all do backing vocals in different places on it. So, really great song. Nick of Time, Thing Called Love, Love Letter, which was another big, big hit. Have a Heart, which was a big hit for her. I Can't Make You, I believe, is that on here? The Road's My Middle Name, excuse me. Is I Can't Make You Love Me on this one? I think that might be on the next one.
Yeah, I don't
one.
See that on there.
That's not on the next one. But just one great song after another. Just one great song. So if you haven't listened to that record, go check it out. Good stuff on there.
Yeah, I'm not big on Bonnie Raitt, but I mean, like I don't listen to her just regularly, but I would. So, because I do love that song. How many times has that been covered? Because I know there's at least three other people that I know. Not that I know, because I don't know their names, but that I've heard that song.
And a little side note, she was one of the things that made the song so big was the video with the actor Dennis Quaid.
Oh, well, is in the video, helps, doesn't it?
And she was so nervous. She called him. She says, "Dennis, can you please be in my video? I've never been in a video before. I don't know what the hell I'm doing. I can't act. I suck." And so he was just there, like making goofy faces at her, and made her very relaxed. And that's why. And that video was like on a heavy rotation when that song came out, because it is a very charming, like. You know, it's just, you know, they just look really cute.
Yeah.
She's playing my boyfriend in the video. All right, Lily, what do you got next?
It'd be nice to just ask them how to do that. So my next song is Blank Space by I Prevail, originally done by Taylor Swift. I don't know if you know this song.
Not at all.
Okay, well, I don't like either band, but or either group. Song by American singer-songwriter Taylor Swift, taken from her fifth studio album, 1989. The song was released to U.S. radio stations at the single as the second single from the 1989. Sorry, on November from the album 1989 on November 10th, 2014, by Republic Records in partnership with Swift's label at the time, Big Machine. Swift co-wrote Blank Space with its producers Max Martin and Shellback. For the lyrics, she conceived the song as a satirical self. Referential nod to her reputation as a flirtatious woman with a series of romantic attachments. Meanwhile, she just, you know, gets in relationships and breaks up with guys.
It's all right, and that's okay, too. Hey, women can break up with people, too.
And musically, it's an...
What should I say, Lily? Some kind of, like, should I put women down?
I'm not finished. Musically, it's an electro-pop song with minimal hip-hop influenced beats. I don't like the band I Prevail, and I don't like Taylor Swift. But when I Prevail decided to cover one of Taylor Swift's Break Up With Me and I Will Sing About It and Make Millions of Dollars songs, this was freaking amazing. It uses both clean and harsh vocals during the song, perfectly mixed together to get the right tone and how I think the song should sound in the first place. Definitely speaks to me on several levels. This is definitely a breakup song for me because... the lyrics basically say, like, let's see how this one goes. Let's see how this one gets screwed up, you know, from the beginning. So I very much relate to this.
Nothing like sabotaging the damn thing before it even starts.
That's how it is. But it has been covered 67 times already. Ryan Adams, Imagine Dragons, and obviously I Prevail are three of those bands.
Ryan Adams. So. Oh, that made me think of an honorable mention. But we'll get to that later. good one, Lily. Okay, we met somebody. You mentioned Stevie Wonder earlier.
I did.
And you mentioned Prince.
I did.
But I had forgotten. I knew this was a Prince song, but like, you know how, like, guys, listen, I'm thinking and talking about music like all the time. So you have to cut me some slack here.
His brain's all over the place.
I feel for you. Prince wrote the song and released it on his second album in 79. Chaka Khan's version uses more instrumentation and an array of production elements that aren't present in Prince's more stripped down original. The song is sung in the first person, so the lyrics about being in lust with someone are gender neutral and translated well to a female singer. The distinctive rap made the song stand out. It certainly grabbed your attention when it came on the radio with a stuttering staccato. Mel, who was a rapper for Grandmaster Flash and the Furious Five, did the rap. The previous year, he rapped on the hit White Lines.
Oh, Melly Mel. Okay, yeah.
Melly Mel, is that it?
That's how we used to say it.
Okay. Stevie Wonder plays harmonica on the track, by the way.
Nice.
He recorded the same day he attended Marvin Gaye's funeral.
Oh. Well, that sucks.
And Stevie Wonder, and there's another connection, Stevie Wonder to Chaka Khan, is he wrote the first hit for Chaka's band Rufus. Tell Me Something Good. Tell Me Something Good. That is a Stevie Wonder song. So again, that kind of carries into who did it better kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Late in the 80s, it was very common for raps to show up in pop songs, but in 84, rap was still very much a novelty to most listeners. The genius of the song was how it integrated Melly Mel's part without scaring off the pop audience. To do this, producer Arif Mardin, specified that the rap have a theme of love with no hip-hop cliches like money and cars. It was also kept short. 8 lines, Mel rhyming about Chaka Khan and how he digs her. Mm-hmm. The stutter at the very beginning also helped, making the section more comical and less aggressive. Mardin came up with the stutter by accident. He explained to NPR, as we were mounting the recording onto the main master, my hand slipped on the repeat machine. So it happened to be Chaka, 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 Chaka Khan. And we said, let's keep that. That's interesting.
That's cool. I like it.
Chaka Khan had no idea that they were going to put rap on the song. The day after she recorded her vocals, her producer, Arif Mardin, surprised her by playing it for her with a Melly Mel's rap. Chaka hated it and couldn't stand hearing her name repeated over and over in the song. Mardin convinced her it would make the song a hit. The downside is that Chaka was confronted by people rapping her name in imitation of the song, which drove her nuts.
She probably knew that was going
to
happen.
Except for the rest of her life, people go up to her, Chaka, Chaka Khan, Chaka, Chaka, you know.
I'd have hated my life too.
Oh my God.
After that. I get it. I'm with Chaka Khan on that.
Oh my goodness. Chaka's label, Warner Brothers, was pursuing her for a hit since her previous solo albums did not sell well. She and her producer, Arif Mardin, decided to appease the label and give them their hit. They were afraid that if they didn't deliver, the label would make Chaka record another with another producer. Mardin had produced Bette Midler, Aretha Franklin, Dusty Springfield, so he could coax a hit out of a diva when he set his mind to it. He worked with Chaka to give the song a very contemporary arrangement, which meant a lot of synth and faster tempo than she was used to. The strategy worked, and the record company had their hit. So, it was selected after a representative of Prince's publishing company sent it to him on a cassette. Chaka said she was a big Prince fan and had been thinking about recording it for a while. Oh, interesting. And when they ordered her to make a hit, she remembered it. So, there's a million things about it. You guys can look it up for yourself. But super fun song.
I do like that one.
Yeah, I roller skated.
Oh, anything that Prince... it's done, obviously. It's cool.
Chaka Khan. Chaka. Oh, yeah, that's a different song.
Yeah, she hates her whole life.
what a cool thing that happened, though. Like, it's a really, I don't know. You guys in Rockland are probably like, why are you talking about that? Get off that. Talk about some rock and roll.
So, no, actually, we're getting quite the compliments tonight.
So I will give that to Lily to get you back to rock and roll. I apologize.
It's okay, Louie. Anyway, we're going to talk about Walking the Dog, originally done by Rufus Thomas, and then redone by Aerosmith, written and performed by Rufus Thomas. It was released on his 1963 album, Walking the Dog. It was his signature hit and also his biggest, reaching number 10 on the Billboard Hot 100 in December 1963 and remaining on the Hot 100 for 14 weeks. It begins with the quoting of the first 14 notes of Mendelssohn's Wedding March from the Midsummer Night's Dream. The version is noted... for Rufus whistling and calling out for his dog to go walking with him. The lyrics make reference to children's nursery rhymes, especially Miss Mary Mac. This was one of the Boston Bad Boys' best cuts before they started getting all ballad happy on us and, you know, going super commercial. Aerosmith is one of the group's sharpest efforts, strutting their prowess as one of the premier rock bands of all time. There were many artists and groups that took a shot at the song, but Aerosmith is the most fun and a salute to what the band was built for because they were super bluesy. They had those roots in all that older stuff that we love. And it has been covered 115 times, including the Rolling Stones, the Kingsmen, the Everly Brothers, Roger Daltrey, Rick Derringer, Rat, Grateful Dead, and, of course, Aerosmith. So, yay. And
I knew we could not get through a podcast without an Aerosmith song.
But guess what? I don't have any Iron Maiden on my list. Shocker. I know. I didn't put it on there. I was trying to shake it up.
I'm very disappointed.
I was trying to shake it up.
We're sort of running a little low on time.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, we're running a little.
I mean, we could do a part three. Hell.
No. This will be a series. We'll do this. We'll do this again. We'll get the Hawk and Pittsburgh Kevin on here as well. Speaking of Aerosmith, real quickly, I'm going to kind of do these kind of quickly.
Okay.
Come Together, not by Aerosmith, but by Gary Clark Jr. from. The Justice League movie, which is terrible, but Zack Snyder redeemed it a little bit with the Snyder cut. But that is one of the best things about this movie is Gary Clark's version of Come Together.
Nice.
It's sick. I mean, Billy Thomas posted that today, and I was like, I'm always funny about Beatle covers. I'm like, because the Beatles, man, come on. Like,
they are the Beatles.
They're the Beatles are the freaking Beatles. And somebody posted any song that somebody covers by the Beatles. I didn't quite agree with that. But I have to say, Gary Clark's version it's insane.
Very
cool.
I have to hear it to make a decision because right now I'm at Aerosmith's
version. It's huge. It's just got this giant production on it. Go ahead. Let's consume kind of quick without too much.
Okay, well, Helter Skelter, originally done by the Beatles, but then done by Motley Crue. It was an early heavy metal influence song. Paul McCartney wanted something heavy and dirty and gritty, so they did it with Helter Skelter, and Motley Crue went and did it after that because Nikki Sixx was obsessed with Marilyn Manson. He wanted to do a song that was associated with him, and even the, like...
You mean Marilyn Manson?
Charles Manson. Sorry.
I was like, wait a minute. I'm like mixed up here.
Sorry. Even the picture disc for the song featured a photo of a fridge with the title written in blood. So he was that obsessed with Charles Manson's whole story. So that's why they redid the whole song.
Good, covered.
82 times.
Good pick. I'm going to pick one that I think some people might disagree with me. Dirty Deeds. I'm not saying this is better than the original, but I'll call it like an honorable mention.
I love this one.
Joan Jett's version of Dirty Deeds with the slide guitar solo. This is what I love about it. She brings something different to it. She's not like, well, you know, we'll just do AC/DC. It doesn't sound like AC/DC. AC/DC is a really interesting band because the songs are easy to play, but the band itself is hard to cover because of the sound. There's just a certain sound that those guys make. So she doesn't even try to do that. She does this kind of bluesy version of it.
What a haunting.
It's really, really good. And that slide guitar solo is freaking kick ass. Go Joan. So I'm just going to throw that. We all know Dirty Deeds.
One of her better covers.
Yeah. Bon Scott's or Angus Young wrote the song, and he said that there was a cartoon in Australia when they're growing up. And there was this dastardly kind of cartoon character, and his motto was Dirty Deeds Done Dirt Cheap. That's where it came from.
That's cool.
Yeah.
We got like 4 minutes. Do you want to do any birthday things or do you want to just keep going?
Let's run down a few more.
Okay. I also have Come On, Feel the Noise, originally done by Slade. We've talked about this whole album. Quiet Riot redid it. They brought it to America because Slade just did not have that edge to make it in America. So when Quiet Riot did it, they brought them sort of over here. It was one of their biggest, I think it was their biggest hit, actually. One of the greatest videos, even one of the greatest one-hit wonders. They've had so many, like, accolades on this song. Originally, lead vocalist Kevin DeBrow was dead set on not covering the song because he wanted the band to write every song on the album. In addition, he was not a big fan of Slade. Instead, the band decided to try to cover the song as badly as they could, so the label would refuse to release it, and it was their biggest hit. And a year later, Quiet Riot would score another hit with another Slade song, Mama, We're All Crazy Now.
Have you heard Quiet Riot's version of All Day and All the Night?
I have.
I don't like it.
I don't like it either.
No,
I
just
they should have gave up.
And so this brings me to another. You know what, guys? I hope you don't mind. I'm not really on any schedule. So if Rock Rage needs to cut it off or whatever, that's totally cool. John, Gigi, you guys are awesome. Thank you so much. But we're going to continue for a little bit. You good?
I'm good.
You good? I have more White Claw back there if you want to.
I saw. So, I took inventory when I got here.
Am I gonna have enough to get to the show?
What am I gonna do?
You just messed me up. Oh, Quiet Riot. All Day and All the Night by the Kinks. I want to just quickly talk about the Van, because Van Halen has done their share of covers, right? Dancing in the Streets,
yes.
Pretty Woman. I think they're kind of a little bit lackluster. I want to talk about their version though of You Really Got Me.
I think it's fantastic.
I think it's great too, and I understand why a lot of people feel that it is superior to the Kinks version. But I thought that for many years too. But in my old age, I have come to appreciate the Kinks sort of like fuck you version with this kind of almost, I don't want to say sloppy because they were a good band. They were a tight band, but it was like this that's kind of what the Stones were able to do. You know, Stones are kind of like it sort of feels like they're being sloppy, but they're not really being sloppy. Right. They can really play. They're just, you know.
I saw a fly or a moth.
Okay. Moth! And they really have that thing on their version of it. They have that punk rock attitude kind of thing that Van Halen just, that's just not what they do. I always say Van Halen's kind of like the heavy metal Beach Boys.
They're the party band.
Yeah, they're super party and his great vocals, slick.
Very California.
Very California. So I'm torn, man, because Eddie Van Halen is my hero, but there is something about that original version I just think that like is overlooked by the Van Halen version. And you can't really put the two together. So maybe Lily would say it's apples and oranges.
It is an apples and oranges kind of
so,
situation.
So that is a kind of thing. What do you got? You got another one?
I got American Woman by Lenny Kravitz.
I like his version. I do.
1970 Canadian rock band burned up the charts with the song they claimed was a love letter to the women of their own country because they can't handle American women. That's what I say to that. It was later released in March 1970 as a single backed with No Sugar Tonight, and it reached number one for 3 weeks, commencing May 9th on both the United States Billboard Hot 100 and, I don't know, something else. I didn't write it down. Kravitz later recorded for the soundtrack for Austin Powers, so he did it specifically for a movie. It was released as a single and was later included in the 1999 reissue of Kravitz's album 5. Kravitz's version is slower and softer than the original without the signature guitar solo. He later said to Randy Bachman that the reason why he skipped the lead guitar part was I couldn't get the sound, I couldn't get the tone. Lenny's was just more, I think it was a more updated version of the song. I don't like the original song, so I'm glad he came out with the song because it made me like the song again. It did win a Grammy for in 1999 for Best Male Vocal Rock Performance. It's used in TV shows and movies like The Big Bang Theory, My Name is Earl, American Beauty, and The Cable Guy, which is what I remember from, movie I remember it from the most, and it's been covered 39 times. Wow. Crocus, Butthole Surfers, Eric Church,
that's
and others.
That's right. Crocus yep. does that. I had forgotten that Crocus does that song. Have you heard their version?
I have heard their version because I heard it today.
I kind of like their version. It's heavier.
It is. I still prefer Lenny Kravitz. I don't know. There's something about his voice that I like better.
No. I get it. Lenny Kravitz is an amazing singer. Yeah. I mean, the guy from Crocus, I mean, he rocks, but like Lenny Kravitz. Okay, did you hear what I said? Lenny Kravitz.
I heard it.
It's just Lenny Kravitz.
Like three times. Like you're going to summon him like Beetlejuice.
Lenny Kravitz. Oh, he's showing up.
Play us a song.
Real quick, or not real quick, Only Women Bleed.
I heard it live.
And it's Alice Cooper song. And I want to talk about this song because this is one of the this would be another podcast, the top 10 most misunderstood songs that aren't people like went off in some tangent and thought it was about something. They calm down, see, no, you're losing your mind.
It's written
contrary to what many listeners, I want to go through this because I think a lot of people do not understand what the song is about. Contrary to what many listeners believe, this is not about menstruation. Men can't say that word. And it does not advocate domestic
violence.
It's
not about moon blood.
There's a metal band. Cooper is singing about how women bleed from the heart, mind, and soul. Several feminist groups protested this song, but it's actually a sympathetic look at domestic abuse. It's a rare song where Cooper doesn't try to shock, but takes the side of the victim. Dick Wagoner, who co-wrote the song with Cooper, told us it's really a song about domestic violence. It was misunderstood when it first came out. It was supposedly about a woman's period, but it wasn't. It was about a woman's subservient position in society to a man. I'm a firm believer that women are the superior sex. Okay. Only Women Bleed was a liberating kind of song.
Hmm.
Alice Cooper and his guitarist also wrote the ballads You and Me and I Never Cry together. Alice called this style heavy metal housewife rock. And he explained in an interview with Cream, C-R-E-E-M, I did those songs totally out of spite. I kept reading so many interviews and articles that said I was never considered musical. Best rock show they ever saw, but musically lacking. They kept saying I was a performer, but I didn't write anything. So I said, oh, yeah, wait to hear this. This ballad was a centerpiece of Alice Cooper's Welcome to My Nightmare tour and his biggest hit from the album. Cooper performed the song with a single dancer and remained part of the stage show for many concerts in the ensuing years. Alex told Mojo, I didn't realize it would end up a woman's anthem. I just needed a ballad for Welcome to My Nightmare. So why are we talking about the song? Because Lita Ford does an amazing version.
And it's fantastic.
It's really good. I think that like the song I love Alice, and it's a great song, but it is almost kind of one of the songs that kind of should be written for a woman to perform in a way.
Yeah, and she, it might be like a hair better than Alice Cooper's. I think she put so much feeling into it, because I finally got to see it live.
Well, that too, and the fact that she's a woman, so I think
it makes sense.
It has a kind of like, it gives the song a kind of different meaning. With a woman
when a woman sings
when
it.
A woman sings yes. it. I guess that's where I'm trying to go.
And it doesn't go to that whole menstruation thing, I think, if a woman's singing it, whether they're a man, when it sounds like it might be a joke.
Exactly. I know exactly what you're saying. Her version is absolutely stunning. I did listen to a respectable version by Tori Amos today.
I could see her doing it.
It's interesting. I don't know if I love it, but you guys can sort of decide that for yourself. I think it's it's an amazing song. What you got?
We may have included this on the last time we did this, but I put The Man Who Sold the World, originally by David Bowie. The one we're talking about is Nirvana. I'm not a huge Nirvana fan, but I do love this song because at the time my grandfather died, like, I constantly listened to this song. So it's like kind of like connected to that for me. The title track of Bowie's third studio album of the same name. It was released in 1970 in the US and 71 in the UK. Bowie recorded his vocal on the final day of mixing the album, reflecting his generally dismissive attitude during the sessions. Musically, it is based around a circular guitar riff from Mick Ronson. Its lyrics are cryptic and evocative, being inspired by numerous poems, including Antigonish by William Hughes Mearns, and I'm sure I'm saying that wrong. Bowie's vocals are heavily phased throughout and have been described as haunting. The Man Who Sold the World went relatively unnoticed upon its initial release. It was not released as a single by Bowie, though appeared as a B-side on the 73 reissues of Space Oddity in the U.S. and Life on Mars in the U.K. Nirvana's take on the man became so closely associated with the band that for years afterward, younger fans would compliment David Bowie for covering a Nirvana song. Bowie was not yet a household name when he wrote the song. His recording feels like it's sung from the perspective of an outsider. Cobain seems to be able to embody the character by the time Nirvana performed it on MTV Unplugged, which I think is the best version of it out there. And his eventual fate means their version is much more haunting. So he eventually died.
Yeah, so it's like, I am the man. It's like him singing. He's like, I am the man who sold the world. Yeah, no, I get you. And especially with him dying. Like, it has a whole new
meaning
thing.
To it.
Yeah, so like, I could definitely see that. And I agree with you.
And it's been covered 116 times.
I actually like, just quickly, and I know that maybe it isn't better, but in my opinion, I like this version. Speaking of David Bowie, I like the Wallflowers version of Heroes.
Okay, yeah, I like that.
I like their version better than Bowie's. Just personal taste. Sorry, didn't mean any blasphemy. Do you guys did anybody here seen the movie Roadhouse? Right?
I have it.
The band in that movie is the Jeff Healey Band.
Yes! I totally forgot about that.
Jeff was a dynamite blues guitar player, and he was also a jazz trumpeter. A lot of people don't know that he was an accomplished jazz trumpet player. And he played a very unique guitar style where he played a regular six-string guitar, played a Stratocaster, but he played it almost like it was a pedal steel. He laid it down flat, and then he fretted, pressing the notes down with the left hand. I don't know if he did any actual slide working up, but anyways, that was his technique. It was very, gave him a unique sound. He came out at the time, like right around the time Stevie Ray Vaughan passed away, and there was this giant push for who's going to be next Stevie Ray Vaughan. So he was kind of thrown out there, and a bunch of other guys, Kenny Wayne Shepherd, Johnny Lang, like it was a whole thing. But I think then in some ways that Jeff's career was just a little bit more authentic, a little bit more poignant. But the reason I'm bringing up Jeff Healey is because he did a covers album, just like Joan Jett has and a lot of different people have. And he does the Steeler's Wheel song, Stuck in the Middle.
I didn't realize that he did that.
And I think it's a way better version.
I'll
like,
have to listen to it.
And I like it better because it rocks. I mean, the Steeler's Wheel version is emboldened in everybody's mind because of Reservoir Dogs.
Right. Okay. Well, yeah. You know, it's funny. I mean,
so it's like, you know, it's very ironic the way it's used in that movie. A Do you guys know the song Baker Street?
Yes.
Jerry Rafferty?
Yeah.
Jerry Rafferty also wrote Stuck in the Middle. He's singing on it. That's who Steeler's Wheel was. It was Jerry Rafferty and Joe Egan.
Nice.
A lot of people did not realize that. The song was about his, like, sort of, he said it was written as a Bob Dylan, like, parody of Bob Dylan's paranoia about the music business. It ridiculed the industry with lyrics like, "A clown said left me, jokers are right here, I am stuck in the middle with you." To Rafferty's utter disbelief, his parody, composed as little more than a joke with a little catchy pop arrangement, struck gold, selling more than a million copies. The song reached a new generation of listeners when Quentin Tarantino used it in the notorious ear-slicing scene in the 1992 movie Reservoir Dogs.
Sorry, I hate to laugh at that. It's so morbidly funny.
Yeah, and anyways, it's very, the Jeff Healey version is, it's just like, you know, it's just a song he picked. I like the song. And it's got the really good crunchy guitars. It's got great guitar solos all over it, as you would expect. So check it out if you've never heard Jeff Healey's version. You got anything else you want to talk about?
I have one last one, and sure. It's sort of an obvious one, but Proud Mary, originally done by CCR. Ike and Tina Turner, I'm sorry, kills it every time. Especially when she's like purring the first lyrics out, and then all of a sudden she shreds it to freaking bits.
Rolling on the rail.
Yeah. She shreds it to bits in a good way, turned into a funk rock vamp with Tina and the Ikettes delivering gospel-influenced vocals. It's primal, and it makes you get up and dance. And we all knew Lou will dance to it if he's drunk enough.
I agree. I forgot about this. I was thinking of Bob Seger's version of Fortunate Son. But I do. This is a good example of a cover. I mean, really, the Ike and Tina Turner version. I mean, no such crazy, but it's a kind of country-ish.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. Just kind of gently rolling down the Mississippi,
which is fine. It's fine. But
you're right, Ike and Tina, man, they bring an energy to it. They heard something in it. They were like, well, I think we can do it like this, and they were absolutely right.
Yeah, absolutely
right. Just a couple of more honorable mentions. Just like Bob Dylan, almost anybody can do a Sex Pistols song better than the Sex Pistols. I think Megadeth's version of Anarchy in the UK is
better.
It's absolutely way better than the original.
Well, they can say.
And I think this is a cool updating of song. I don't know if it's technically better, but this is a good updating of the song. And that's Hair of the Dog, the Guns N' Roses version. It's a kind of good updating. It just, you know, it's a good kicking-ass rock and roll song. And they just brought that more modern kind
it's
of production
modern. Yeah,
to it. You know what I mean? Axl sings his ass off, of course. Slash. I mean, you know, what can you say about that? And I'm just trying to think if there's any other ones that there's a gazillion. I want to refer you guys to a couple things. Matthew Sweet and Susanna Hoffs have done two covers albums together. And
if
you haven't heard them, you should go check them out, as well as Tommy Shaw and Jack Blades, Shaw Blades.
Everybody should be.
They have really great covers albums. So we're gonna do this again because there's a million of them that are so cool and so fun to do. Dear Mr. Fantasy by Big Sugar, which somebody brought up on the in the group today, and I listened to that. That's totally respectable. There's just too many to freaking mention. I really appreciate everybody who chimed in today with suggestions and ideas, a bunch of which I'd never heard. I sent you guys, did you see that cover of Easy Lover that I sent you guys?
No.
What?
Sorry.
Why don't you not look at texts?
This is
the 21st freaking century.
Did I not read it? Maybe I was tired.
Oh my God. By Jaded Heart.
Oh, I didn't look at it.
It really works. If you haven't listened to it, it really works as a kind of 80s rock.
Okay, yeah.
Hair metal kind of song. We'll play. We'll jam
it
before we're done. So check it out, guys. I think that you would. I think you'd really do it. I'm gonna just quickly, because it wouldn't be a Ludini Rock and Roll Circus without just a quick visit to This Day in Music. Of course, the Beatles did all kind of stuff.
No doubt, because the Beatles do everything.
On this day,
that's a good one.
Hank Williams recorded "I'm So Lonesome I Could Cry."
I am so lonesome.
Aw.
Bob Dylan, you said it 100 times
Bob
today.
Bob Dylan,
you summoned
a million times. 2 weeks after the Woodstock Festival, Second Isle of Wight Festival, over 150,000 turned up in 2 days to see Bob Dylan, the band, blah, blah, blah. Of course, you know those guys are great. Janis Joplin, three-day Texas Pop Festival took place featuring Janis Joplin, Led Zeppelin, Sam and Dave Santana, and a bunch of awesome bands. On this day, sadly, 1975, Paul Kossoff, guitarist with Free, died for 35 minutes.
Oh, I don't know what that means, but okay.
And then he officially, finally died on March 19th,
1976. I want to pretend
I just really was into drugs really, really hard. It was unfortunate. A really cool guitar player. Major influence on Joe Bonamassa. Anything really stupid? Let's just throw a few birthdays.
Can I just say something real
sure.
quick? The other guys aren't here. Nothing the Beatles have done.
Whoa, wait a minute. Hank Williams, the Byrds, Bob Dylan, Zager and Evans, Janis Joplin.
There it is.
Okay, there's a John Lennon, Yoko Ono did something today. They played Madison Square Garden.
So there's that.
Yeah, there is never a, I swear, there's nothing. There's never a day where the Beatles didn't do something.
It's always something.
They have to do something. Real quick, let's throw out. So I know there's a couple of birthdays. Oh, Kitty Wells, a country singer. John Phillips from the Mamas and Papas. Boy, not too many. John Moody, who worked with Whitesnake for a little while. Boy,
it's like sad today. It's a good thing we went over on other stuff.
Yeah, not too much going on. So you guys didn't miss much with this day in rock. It was a slow day in rock.
This was the day they all slept.
This is rock's day off. Okay, guys, thank you so much for hanging out with us. Lily, remind the kids at home again how they can check you out, what you got going on.
I am on rockrageradio.com, where you can download the free app. My show is Hot Licks with Lily 6. It's Thursday, 6 p.m. Eastern time. And my next Lily 6 is live Saturday, September 18th at the Subalpine.
Ludini Rock and Roll Circus.com and Lou Lombardi Music.com is where you can get all kind of Ludini swag and cool stuff and get exclusive music and exclusive conversation. So check that out, as well as a shout one more time to wolfscustoms.online and rockrageradio.com. Oh, guys, this has been a lot of fun, right, Lily? Did you have a good time?
I always have a good time.
And we didn't, like, run out of stuff to talk about, like, without the other guys here. So, real quick, guys, one more time, like, if you see the Hawk online, you know, give him a shout-out, ask him how he's doing, you know, you guys, some of you guys out there, feel free to just shoot him a supportive message. I know that him and Samantha and the pups are dealing with
all kinds of crap.
Major screw-up right now with where they're living with the hurricane and everything, so... all right, guys, have a great week, and we'll catch you all on the next Ludini Rock. Oh, I wanted to add one more thing.
Go ahead.
I'm trying to figure out, like, a good sign-off, like, thing, you know what I mean? Okay. So I think I'm going to do this. And remember, as Viv Savage said, have a good time all the time.
Door, I'm gonna raise you up to the top of the steeple. Trash talking, sideways walking. They do their best practical magic, reality twisting. I'm insisting this comedy is turning tragic. Let's rewrite the script today. Peace.